From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. That's Buster Olney's music. And I like it, because I like Buster Olney, to be honest with you. And I know you do too, Kansas City. Buster, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay. You know, fighting off a remnant of a cold, but I'll be fine.
Jake recommended mushroom coffee to me, so mushroom coffee will help that immunity.
Yeah, that'll never happen. No. Forget it.
There it is.
I mean, that just sounds terrible.
It is.
Mushroom coffee? Yeah. Good Lord.
It doesn't taste good, but Jake tells me it'll make me feel better, and I need to feel better, Buster.
It's these nootropics, Buster.
Yeah, no shot. There's no chance I'm ever going to drink mushroom coffee. That's the worst idea I've heard all year. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jake Gutierrez. You know what? But I took the bait.
Buster, a little honey in there, Buster, would be good.
Mm. Buster, I don't know that I've ever...
It's a total setup. I mean, you just picked out two random ingredients. There's no way that's real.
Oh.
It's just like, what sounds completely disgusting? Mushrooms and coffee.
Tell them the benefits.
You told him, yeah, this will work.
It's great. It's great for your blood pressure, your glucose... Your blood glucose?
How about that?
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah, sure.
What if I told you Bobby Wood Jr. drinks mushroom coffee?
Yeah.
Then I'd be buying it by the gallon.
Right.
That's right.
So we were talking about this. We before the season, Bobby Wood Jr. was +2,000 to win AL MVP, and now he's right behind Juan Soto. Soto's +200, and Bobby Wood Jr. is +250. He's on pace for a 157 run scored? 153?
153, I believe.
Which would be the most since Lou Gehrig in a season. He's been incredible. And so he really is, right now, at least early, he's a strong candidate. He's in the MVP conversation the way he's played so far.
Yeah, he's either 1 or 1A at this point in the MVP conversation, and we're a quarter of the way through the season. So that's saying something. And I do think Aaron Judge probably at some point is going to enter the building, and maybe that would be to the detriment of Juan Soto because, you know, the Royals, you know, have one anchor to their lineup. The Yankees have two. But, you know, Bobby Witt Jr., I tweeted out some of this yesterday about his on-pace numbers, and you mentioned 153 runs. He's on pace to have 47 doubles, 21 triples, 21 home runs. He's on pace to have over 50 stolen bases. You know, he's hitting well over 300. It's remarkable how good he is right now. In every game, it feels like he does something that gives them a chance to win. You know, yesterday when I was watching a different game and I saw that they had, you know, scored, and you're like, okay, Bobby Witt Jr. probably scored that run. Yep, sure enough. Yeah, that's exactly the way that it is. It's remarkable how consistent he is when you're talking about, you know, someone who at this point on pace for 205 hits for the regular season plus an additional 60 to 70 walks. That's pretty incredible.
I was bringing this up, Buster, just like thinking about back in the day when George Brett was playing. It was just a known fact that the best hitter on the team was going to hit third. Bobby Witt Jr. hits second. Juan Soto hits second. Is that now the spot where the best hitter hits? I mean, how much has that changed?
Yeah, that's changed a lot. You know, there were times, as you guys know, when Barry Bonds was with the Giants, he would hit cleanup. You know, that was sort of the old. When we were growing up, you know, number three was the guy with the highest average. Number four was the guy who hit the most home runs. Now teams absolutely look at it as we want the best hitter hitting high in the lineup so he gets an extra chance to bat and also to have an impact on the other guys in the lineup. If, you know, if you hit Bobby Witt Jr., if you wanted to get him the most plate appearances, you'd hit him leadoff. But then you also would lose some of the impact that he potentially would have as a dynamic hitter, you know, on the guy who's batting in front of him. So instead you hit him in the number two spot, and I think that's you know, why in recent years you've seen Aaron Judge in that spot a lot for the Yankees. You've seen Mike Trout in that spot, Shohei Ohtani, you know, some of the best guys, because teams want to balance out that, you know, the desire to give their best hitter an extra 20 plate appearances over the course of the season, plus have the impact on the other hitters. And, you know, the great thing about Bobby Witt Jr. is that he just has so much impact between the power and the speed. He could hit the top of the lineup. He could hit in the middle of the order if he wanted to do that. And I just mentioned about, you know, Soto and he going for MVP. I was thinking about it this morning. I think, you know, Soto is going to get more attention and more, you know, headlines because he plays in New York. But I also believe that when it comes to the MVP award and Cy Young award sometimes, Manager of the Year award, that the players who play in small and mid-markets also have an advantage because they're not surrounded by, you know, 15 stars. And so the quote-unquote, you know, value or, you know, how important is this guy to his team, the equation's going to be naturally seen as higher for a player like Bobby Witt Jr. versus Soto, because Soto's surrounded by Judge and Giancarlo Stanton, and later in the year, you know, Garrett Cole. And I think that's going to help Bobby Witt Jr.'s chances.
And also, if it comes down, let's say, to a race between those two for MVP, and you'll know this better than I will, we put so much focus on offensive numbers. How much of an influence will it be that Bobby Witt Jr. plays shortstop and plays a hell of a shortstop versus an outfielder?
Big, no question. You know, the shortstops, catchers, center fielders, I think have always had an inherent advantage. And look, Soto's been a better outfielder. He worked on it hard during the offseason. He's playing in a smaller right field in Yankee Stadium. He's a better outfielder this year than he's been in the past. But, you know, in terms of defensive impact, it's not going to be close when you're talking about, you know, a guy playing shortstop like Bobby Witt Jr. and also playing at a higher level. Then, you know, I think Juan Soto, who on his best day is an average outfielder.
Buster, we also have been talking a lot about how Salvador Perez is putting up another incredible season offensively. He's toward the top of Major League Baseball in RBIs right now. And this idea of his Hall of Fame case, where do you stand on Salvi as a Hall of Famer right now?
So I don't think he's a Hall of Famer right now. But I think with his, you know, seasons in recent years, since 2020, I think he's starting to enter the conversation. I think a big number for him is going to be 2,000 hits. You know, he's got, what, 1,480, something in that range. I think 2,000 will be important for him because it's going to demonstrate longevity. He's got, you know, the gold gloves. He's going to wind up. He's closing in on 300 homers. He's going to wind up probably somewhere in the range of 350 to 400. So I think the 2,000 hits will be important. You know, 5 years ago I would have told you no, that's not something he's got a shot at. But I think year by year by year, especially as he balances out the time between catching and, you know, serving as a designated hitter, I think that his chances increase. And, you know, here's the good thing. You know, his adjustments behind the plate, I think, are helping him as well. It feels like that the organization's making an effort to keep him in the lineup, but more so than a lot of catchers at his age. So if you add, you know, another 3-4 years where he's getting, you know, 130 to 150 hits a year, then all of a sudden you're coming up on 2,000 hits, you're coming up on 350 homers. And, yeah, for a catcher to have that kind of production over that long a period of time, when and also he had a sustained period in his career where he was considered one of the best, or if not, you know, one of the top two or three in the game, and he's won a championship. He's checking a lot of boxes.
And that's what I was going to ask you. What about postseason accomplishments? You know, he had one of the biggest hits in Royals history when he won the wild card game. He won the World Series MVP. And I bet it wouldn't hurt much if the Royals got back to the playoffs a time or two before he's done. And who knows, maybe it could happen this year. How does that factor in?
Yep, I absolutely believe it's a factor when voters look at it, you know, because they weigh all of those things. And let's be real here, too. I do think that we have to keep in mind that the bar for the Hall of Fame has gotten lower since when George Brett was voted in. You know, it used to be that it was only an inner circle thing. And, you know, players, even elite players, had to wait on the ballot for a long time. But when you have, you know, players, a really great major leaguer like Harold Baines, get voted into the Hall of Fame through the Veterans Committee, you know, that he was a really great hitter, but he was not at the level of a George Brett. And I think when those guys are put in the Hall of Fame, it lowers the bar. And I think that the voters have to respond to that, because if that's what the precedent is, it's, you know, if a Harold Baines, a Lee Smith, you know, the pitchers, you know, who are not necessarily, you know, just guys who were dominant all the time, are voted in, then I think voters have to respond to that and think about putting players in. And I think because Salvi's going to be a borderline case, it's going to help him.
You know, and Scott Sharp, the Royals assistant GM, comes on the show with us every week, and he mentioned yesterday that he thinks that the catching position has been undervalued by the Hall of Fame over the years. Do you believe that?
Yes, 100%. The numbers show that. I think, you know, for sure, catcher. I think third base is another one, which is why we're getting a little bit of this correction, you know, between Scott Rolen and you know, Adrian Beltre and others. I think those are two spots where you're going to see those numbers increase.
All right, Buster, so we just talked about how the Royals have gone through this stretch where they've been playing against good teams, playoff contending teams, above 500 teams, and they did well. They held their own, so they're still in contention. And now they go on a West Coast trip to take on the Angels and the Mariners. The Mariners are a decent side, but the Angels, at least their record says they're not. What are the Royals getting into in this four-game series?
An opportunity, without a doubt. Now, they're on the road, and it's baseball, so... You know, you would never say that it's like, you know, a football power going against, you know, one double-A school. It's nothing like that. But there's also no question they're catching the Angels at the right time. With, you know, in their first year without Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout is out, as you guys know. Anthony Rendon is out. All their highest-paid guys are out. You know, their thought was and their hope was is that with Ron Washington taking over as manager, that it was a team that was going to have more energy, you know, and be able to play on a daily basis with enough aggressiveness where maybe they put people on their heels. And they got off to a decent start, but now with these injuries, I mean, they're right back to, you know, a team that's on a trajectory to lose 65 to 100 games, excuse me, to win 65 games and, you know, lose close to 100 games, probably when year's over. Again, be looking at a change with their leadership. You know, Perry Manassian, I actually think he's done a good job as their general manager, but we know how Artie Moreno, their owner, is kind of like an 11-year-old kid who flips a board game when it's not going well, and that might be what they're looking at. So there's no question that the Royals are catching him at the right time.
All right. Prospect heads are very excited about Pittsburgh promoting Paul Skeens. What do we expect and anticipate from this terrific pitching prospect?
Total dominance. You know, he's the best pitching prospect to come up into the big leagues in Steven Strasburg, who, you know, for all of the, you know, people have talked about how Strasburg's, you know, last contract, $245 million, pitch 50 innings, was, you know, the worst contract because of production. The bottom line is when Steven Strasburg got into the big leagues, he was exactly who we thought he might be, striking out 14 in his debut, completely dominant stuff. And that's what you're going to see with Paul Skeens. He throws 102 miles an hour. He's got a nasty splitter. He's got a changeup. You know, a breaking ball. He's going to strike out probably something in the range of 40 to 45% of the hitters that he faces right away. Right away, the Pirates are adding one of the best starting pitchers in baseball.
That mushroom coffee sounding a little bit better now, Buster?
No, I apologize. I'm actually feeling a lot better than it sounds. So I apologize for the coughing. But no, mushroom coffee is ridiculous. What a stupid concept.
God, I love this Buster. I've never seen Buster this fired
this
up.
Red-ass Buster. We like this.
We need more of this. Yeah. I think we need to start every segment with a health remedy proposed by Jake Gutierrez.
You won't like any of them.
And Buster's reaction to it.
Tell them the shots that we've been doing.
The ginger cayenne shots?
Ginger cayenne shots in the morning. Would that sound good to you?
I mean, that is such an easy formula. Think of something that just is absolutely awful and it's good for you. What a joke.
Ginger
Buster,
is great for inflammation.
Buster, I tried one of those ginger cayenne shots, and I had to fight back throwing up for like the next half hour on the show.
But you felt good after, right?
Right, and I'm sure you felt great after that.
Oh, man, all the inflammation was gone just like that. I'm kidding.
Cayenne for the blood.
Yeah, the blood.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Jake came back. In a previous life, he was a snake oil salesman going through
that's
Missouri
the truth.
Back in the 1880s.
That's the truth.
It'll help your water machine, Buster, I'd tell you about.
Oh, my God.
Hydrogen water.
Yeah, people, you're pulling people off of crutches, right? Yeah, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, amongst other things.
All right, Buster, before we let you go, the Phillies are starting to emerge, and maybe there's some trouble in Toronto. What do you got for us?
Yeah, so the Phillies are the best team in baseball right now. You know, we're paying attention to the Dodgers because they've got Ohtani, who's been unbelievable. They've got that great top of the order. And by the end of the year, it's possible the Dodgers will be the best team because they just got back Walker Buehler. At some point, they'll get Clayton Kershaw back. Their rotation could be great. But right now, guys, I saw the Phillies over the weekend. That team is dynamic, and that team is deep. Their starting rotation is excellent. Their bullpen is rounding into form. They've got a great culture in their clubhouse. They've got the best home field advantage in baseball with a crowd that it really seems absolutely symbiotic with the team. It is remarkable. So that is the team to beat. You know, I've told you guys through the years a lot of stupid predictions. I'm feeling good about the prediction I made before the year started that the Phillies are going to win the World Series. And yes, problems in Toronto. Before yesterday's game in Philadelphia, their manager, John Snyder, called a team meeting. They have been an absolute disappointment. You know, they made the playoffs last year, but were quickly knocked out. They had a very mediocre offense. They decided after some flirtation with Ohtani that they were going to run back the same offense. And again, you know, Bo Bichette is not playing well. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr., while hitting in recent days, generally speaking, has gotten off to a slow start. Their offense is mediocre again. It feels like that the whole organization is in trouble and potentially nearing the end of this window that everyone thought that they might win with Bichette and with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And if you're talking about potentially surprise sellers before the deadline, the Toronto Blue Jays might be one of those teams if they don't start turning around, because they're in the same division as the Baltimore Orioles, who I think are the best team in the American League, and the Yankees, who are better than anybody thought they would be with Juan Soto.
Okay, so that'll just we'll wrap it up with this, because we've had these conversations, because the Marlins already made a deal, and so the first biggest deals already happened. For the Royals, if they're looking, you know, they have not been getting enough production in the outfield, but Drew Waters is tearing it up, so that would be a move they could make. If the Royals are looking for help, what team do you think? Clearly the Marlins. So you think the Blue Jays might turn into sellers? What other teams are starting to realize that maybe it's getting close for them to time to sell?
Yeah, it's probably too soon to really identify, a strong list of teams that would move. I mean, going into the year, we thought Oakland would be sellers, but they're hanging in there. The Angels, for sure, when you look at where they are and what they did at the end of last year, where they put all those players on waivers, wouldn't surprise me if at some point Artie Moreno, again, flips the game board and says, trade anybody who's making money, and maybe some outfielders shake free there. I think a team to watch if you are the Royals and you are thinking about possible corner outfield help, the Boston Red Sox.
Oh.
With Tyler O'Neill. To me, he's an interesting guy for them. He's, off to a good start with the Red Sox. He's playing well. He's a free agent when the year's over. You know, the Red Sox now are in playoff contention. They wouldn't trade him at this point. But if they drift out, that is a really interesting player to me. You know, we had the Red Sox on Sunday Night Baseball a couple weeks ago, and Alex Cora told us, look, he's a much better, all well-rounded player than, you know, what they thought. So that's one to watch. And maybe another surprise seller could be the Houston Astros. Their owner, Jim Crane, is someone who is a realist at heart, I think. I think he's as involved as any owner is in baseball decisions. And if they continue on this trajectory, they're losing two-thirds of their games. They're getting smoked by the Yankees in New York this week. If they continue to lose, then, you know, maybe they look at their roster and say, you know, Alex Bregman, before he becomes a free agent, maybe there's some value there. Maybe they flip a couple of their outfielders over. Maybe a starting pitcher or two, Justin Verlander. Maybe they put him out on the marketplace. But I do think that, you know, it's possible that you could see the Astros right near the deadline. I think they would wait as long as possible, but maybe then they would say, hey, let's see what we can get for value as we turn this over.
Buster, thank you so much for the time. The mushroom coffee is in the mail.
No. return to sender.
Wow. Well, you know what? Good song by Elvis, so thank you for mentioning that. That's Buster Olney from ESPN. Get well soon, guys. Buster. We'll be ready for you next week.
You.
I mean, it doesn't taste good. But I'm past that, you know. I want
throw a little.
I
honey
need
in
things.
There.
You know what? You want to pull some out of my rear? What, do you have some or what?
I'll bring some. I'll
thank
bring
you.
Some honey.
I feel like Jake would have some honey. Like,
I know that's what I mean. I feel in your pocket.
You.
Oh, I love honey.
Sleeve.
Oh, man.
Like really good honey.
Yeah,
local honey.
Yeah.
Yes,
raw honey.
Absolutely.
Raw. I have honey. I enjoy honey.
Raw honey. It's great. And, I mean it. It's good for you too.
You know, I just if it starts to get too complicated, then I know me and I'll give up. I just put the. You know, put the mix in, boom, drink it.
There you go.
Be done with it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I don't think I've ever heard Buster so aggressively attack any idea
that
we've
pacified.
Ever had.
I just need
did
to,
not like
you know.
That.
Yeah.
But I'm forcing myself to drink more water. I'm forcing myself to drink mushroom coffee. I've been very good on my vitamins and my supplements.
Creating new habits, buddy.
Absolutely.
That's what you're doing.
Absolutely. So
it's good, man. The willingness to change.
How about this? How many times did you hear this in your life? You were a positive influence on me. There was a day that didn't seem a
no.
likely thing for me to...
For either one of us.
Same, right.
We used to be quite
you
the
think
opposite
we're bad
for
at influence
other.
On each other?
Yeah, well...
Hey.
Come, get up here.
Come get me. All right. All right, then.
You know. It is funny how life works that way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it is funny. It's funny to watch.
It's almost like it was all meant to be.
Something like that, right?
That which is meant for me shall not pass me by.
So it's not just us. Buster Olney's calling Bobby Witt Jr. an MVP frontrunner.
Wow.
All right.
We have guys that are candidates for starting pitcher in the All-Star game, and Bobby Witt Jr. is a top two candidate for MVP.
Okay, so by the way, before we break, we were talking about Pride of the Yankees a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And look, I won't speak for Nate because we bring up a movie and he says he hasn't seen it, so maybe he doesn't. But I think I think the two sports like in my life that have shown that have been the source of great subjects for movies, baseball movies and boxing movies. That's just how it's worked out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking about that. The other movie that I used to watch with my grandpa all the time was Somebody Up There Likes Me. You ever see that one? That was a great one.
I don't think I ever saw that. Let me check this out.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
It's about Rocky Graziano. Yes.
Oh.
Very good.
Paul Newman.
Yes. Yes.
Steve McQueen.
Yeah.
I don't think
that's a big one.
That shocks me though.
And also now cuz the boys haven't seen it yet outside of the Rocky series, which will always be near and dear to my heart, the greatest boxing movie ever and one of the greatest movies ever is Raging Bull.
Yes.
And so, like, even if you're not a boxing fan, if you haven't seen Raging Bull, then I don't know what to do with you. Because that was the first movie in the wonderful partnership of Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci on film, right? And I think Roger Ebert, not that they were the end-all be-all, but Siskel and Ebert, I think he named that the best movie of the 80s, of the entire decade. Mm. But it's unbelievable. Martin Scorsese, Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, Scorsese, Frank Vincent, who went on to great success by, of course, getting killed by De Niro and Pesci and Goodfellas, and then getting killed in The Sopranos. He got killed in many great movies. But I say this because it looks like there's a new boxing movie that we might want to wrap our arms around. Mm. So we've had former female champion Christy Martin on the show before. I don't know if you were here for that, but she has an unbelievable story. And I don't know if you had a chance to watch the Netflix documentary about her life and the abuse she went through in her career and everything else. So apparently they are going to turn that into a movie. Because as soon as I saw the Netflix documentary, I saw this has got to be a movie. Who have they, apparently, according to many reports, who has signed on to star as Christy Martin in her biopic? What current popular actress right now?
Margot Robbie.
No. Got to go younger right now. This is going to be, I think, her, you know, in the younger part of her life. So think younger. Very trendy. All over social media.
Gal from Euphoria.
That's not her name. See, there's a couple of them that you could go. There's many wonderful actresses from Euphoria that are popular and trendy, so you got to be specific.
My brain's farting right now, so I can't.
Jake? Sydney Sweeney.
Sydney Sweeney is what
I was going to say something probably inappropriate.
Yeah, so. I wish you wouldn't.
I won't.
Yeah, thank you. So, there you go.
I got the right person. Just couldn't figure the name.
Well, did you? We didn't know.
Yeah.
Could have been Zendaya.
Right. Well, I had to look up what Christy, because I'm unfamiliar with Christy Martin. Mm-hmm. I had to look up what she looked like.
Coal miner's daughter. They don't quite look alike, Jake, but
Hollywood can do some magic.
Yeah, that's right. So, there you go. We'll see what that's like.
Wow.
Interesting. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB.
When I say that, I mean Jake wouldn't want to quit. He wanted to go.
He really. Never went down, man. He never got me down, man. You hear me? Never got me down. Yeah, see, look.
And in the 13th round, the hard luck round, the championship of the world has changed hands.
Sugar Ray Robinson is like, get this man away from me. I never went down, Ray. You never got me down, Ray. Something bad.
Down, Ray.
Yeah. What a great scene.
I
look back.
You never got me down, Ray.
Siskel and Ebert both had Raging Bull as the best movie of the 80s. And then I looked at... you know, I'm going to see how many of these I can watch before they put me in the ground here. American Film Institute's top 100 movies of all time. Citizen Kane is number one.
You ever seen that?
I watched that. I watched that during my, well, I had to, but I enjoyed it because it was a prelude to my fascination with Mr. Orson Welles.
Right? he had a birthday over the past week,
I retweeted his videos. I put it out there.
I saw that.
All kinds of stuff. Citizen Kane 1. The Godfather number 2. Casablanca number 3. And then Raging Bull number 4. The top 10. Singing in the Rain. Gone with the Wind. Lawrence of Arabia. Schindler's List. Vertigo, and number 10's The Wizard of Oz.
I've seen a surprising number of those.
Have you?
It's good.
Well, because of my long-standing poor record of seeing classic movies.
Right.
Back when Netflix first came out, when it was the service that mailed you DVDs.
Yeah, you got two, you send one.
Yeah, I basically just started going through the list of, like, the most highly, you know, respected movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I watched Citizen Kane because of that, and Casablanca. I'm trying to think which other ones out of those, like Breakfast at Tiffany's. But I haven't seen Raging Bull. I obviously need to do that.
Yeah, that was the best one of all of them. Scorsese.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scorsese. Yeah.
True story, too, right?
Oh, it's great. Yeah. And all the weight that De Niro gained to play. And then the tremendous shape he got in to play.
And the makeup on that nose.
Right, to play Jake LaMotta both as a young man as an, and then as an old man, so. That's right. Let's hear. Let's hear Orson Welles.
It's always been celebrated for its excellence. There is a California champagne by Paul Masson, inspired by that same French excellence. It's fermented in the bottle, and like the best French champagne, it's vintage dated. So Paul Masson.
Cut.
The French.
He doesn't do anything.
If you see the full video, then you'll see. It's, boy, it's quite a visual to add to the audio there.
Yeah. Well, and then we had the audio. I got to find the
the French.
But when he was doing the commercials,
the fish.
For the fish sticks, yeah.
That is a.
He didn't care much for the copy that was written for
the fjord
commercial.
It's for the peas.
Yes.
I don't know if I can.
Oh, I don't think you can play any of that.
Well,
we have. There's audio out there of Orson Welles just berating different people while he was doing a voiceover for fish sticks. I don't know what to tell you about that. But
we know a remote farm in Lincolnshire where Mrs. Buckley lives. Every July. Peas grow there. Do you really mean that?
So in other words, I'd start half a second late.
Don't you think you really want to say July over the snow? Isn't that the fun of it?
I'll stop there.
Yeah, because then he starts cursing.
Yeah, right.
It's wonderful if you enjoy that sort of thing. Let's switch things up, and let's play a little, let's hear from the Kelseys, huh?
Yeah. Hey. It's like hearing from the Kelseys.
Latest episode of the New Heights podcast. Killer Trav. So we played the sound last week of Patrick Mahomes on Logan Paul's podcast telling him they're going to run corn dog with a shovel pass to win the next Super Bowl. Three-peat, let's go. Here is the Kelseys discussing Patrick Mahomes and his appearance on Logan Paul's podcast.
Coach Reed always has this. Listen, he's got the double move. He's got the next level of the play. You know what I mean? Like, just when you think you got him, no, you don't.
He wants you to defend corndog because you defend corndog, the next one's going to score.
Exactly.
Like, if we're playing rock, paper, scissors, and I tell you, hey, I'm throwing scissors, what do you think I'm throwing?
Not scissors.
Anything but scissors. And bam, they come scissors. Down anyways. Double f*** you. You thought I was f***ing around? I'm dead serious. I'm throwing scissors.
He is psycho. And now you're just frustrated mentally.
Yeah.
Because this guy knew it was coming.
He just told me what he was going to do. And then I say, hey, I'm throwing scissors again. Ha-ha, rock! He got me again. I better not throw paper.
True competition, baby. True competition. It's not always athletic. Sometimes just right up here.
No doubt.
Jason knows that. He's a professional mind. Let's just make sure we get to New Orleans, boys, and then worry about what plays we're going to run.
All right, here Travis Kelce reminisces about his experience at rookie minicamp back in the day.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of peeked at, like, my rookie minicamp. I was a fucking scrub.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There were some plays where it was like, oh, yeah, nice route. Oh, nice feet. There were some other plays where it was like, you are a f***ing jabroni.
I hate watching old tape of myself.
Yeah.
It's like, why was I doing that? Why would I do that? Just put your hand here. It's so stupid. If only I knew now what I knew when I was 27, I would have been so good.
Oh, man. Monday morning quarterback. Let's go.
And let me tell you something. And they're talking about football. If I could just know, just in life, know now what I didn't know when I was 27, or if I could apply things when I was 27 that I know now.
That's why they say youth is wasted on the young.
Who said that?
They.
Well, I want to put a name on it. Who's your source?
Well, I've heard it from a lot of different people, but I don't know who authored the quote.
I also don't do those things when I'm 51 either, so maybe I just never learn from my mistakes.
Well, the only way to get experience is to screw up a whole bunch, usually.
Apparently Oscar Wilde.
Oh, there you go. I like...
Related to Olivia, by any chance?
Yes.
Maybe.
Great-grandfather.
All right, let's hear more from the Kelseys. Apparently Jason Kelsey's had enough of guys posting their workouts on social media.
I know that everybody's into social media now. I don't care if you're posting stuff like that as long as you're actually working. If you're working, do whatever the f*** you want on social media. I don't care. But in my experience, most of the guys posting shit on social media
ain't working.
Yeah, they're like, I literally would see guys come in, take a photo of them doing some curls, and walk straight out. My brother, you just got in this motherfucker. And then I'd see on social media putting that work in. Like, come on. Let's get out of this.
Yeah.
But there's guys, I mean, Aaron Donald used to post videos of his guys doing knife fighting with his hands. I went and worked out for a week with Aaron. I'm like, oh, this dude's actually, he's actually putting that work in, right? So if you're putting the work in, more power to you. Post it to social media all you want. But I just can't stand when guys are like, do one set just so they can get a post out there.
Jake, you like it.
I like what? Them posting?
You like to see the social media workouts, don't you?
Not particularly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tend to agree with both those dudes.
I don't really, yeah.
You don't really what?
You're working out. Sweet. Cool story, bro. You know? I don't know, man. I don't get it.
I get it.
You do?
No. Who am I to say? Who am I to judge? Whatever.
I mean, I guess if you're a trainer and you're running a business and you're working guys out, you show what you're putting people through. You know, I guess I kind of get that.
Sure.
But the actual, I don't know. I don't know. I've posted myself running before.
Yeah, don't you? Isn't that what Goggins does all the time?
Yeah. I mean, I guess.
But he's doing it to try to inspire people.
Right.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If you're putting, like he's saying, if you're not putting the work, if you're working hard in the gym or whatever, and you're trying to inspire people, or you've built yourself up or lost a bunch of weight, be proud of it. Post it.
Yeah. I mean,
love yourself.
Usually you're doing that because you want to help somebody else who's been in a spot that you've been in and you've climbed out of it.
Yeah, I guess the motivation, there's some people that post things on social media just to, hey, look at me.
Right.
Look at me doing great.
Don't you ever talk bad about Goggins in front of Jake. Let me tell you that right now.
I saw a post from Jake.
He'll set you straight.
Yeah. There's other people that are posting because it's like, hey, this might help you. You know, I'd like to help people. I'd like to inspire people. You know,
Jake, you continue to inspire people.
Jake does.
Jake Goggins.
I think Jake does much more inspiring on a person-to-person level than on social media.
Thank you.
Oh, he does videos when he's running and doing stuff.
Yeah, I'm not saying he doesn't do any. I'm just saying that.
Don't criticize him for that,
man.
Yeah, get off me, Nate.
He's just trying to.
My words are getting twisted.
Trying to help things. Trying to help people.
I would encourage a lot of people that you can do more impactful work with others in a person-to-person level than. Sometimes I feel like we kind of, in today's world, feel like, oh, I'm going to post something on social media and that'll solve everything.
But Goggins can't meet everyone. He's got millions of followers.
That's a good point.
You know, he's got to touch as many people as he can.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing. You know what I mean?
I mean, it,
you know
so
what I mean
speak.
By that.
He's touched me.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, that's
well,
none
see,
of my business.
That's why he's changed so much.
Right.
Right? All Jake is trying to do is touch as many people as possible.
Absolutely.
We'll take a break back after this on WHB.